Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
By the way, what a great idea by the LA Times to do this this LMU survey, ask 1,000 LA County residents to pick their favorite team plus their favorite player. And just kind of looking at it, it's interesting. It's fascinating to see that, okay, after the Lakers and the Dodgers, Rams, Clippers, Galaxy, Angels, and then the Chargers after that. Let me give you guys an idea. This is exactly what they said in the article. This was Bill Shaken that did this, and Bill Plaschke as well. Chargers almost invisible in the market, 1.2%. So that means out of these 1,000 votes that are out there, you know, one person is basically saying that they or, you know, obviously more than one, but they are saying that their favorite team is the Los Angeles Chargers. It's not a surprise. It's not a shock. It shouldn't be a shock. I think everybody has kind of said to themselves when the Chargers were moving up here, and I highlight this because this is the reality. This is the reality of Los Angeles. The reality is you have the Rams that are a more popular football team in LA. You have the Raiders that are a more popular football team in LA. And then you have a number of other teams that are more popular here in Los Angeles. Yet the Chargers are going to share SoFi Stadium with the Rams, and there'll be a tenant in there. So not too much of a shock that they are 1.2% of the market. And even that seems pretty high. I'm still trying to figure out the 10 votes that they got to make that happen. Okay, so here's the other one. The other indicator here, because we have on here from a player perspective, I mentioned LeBron James, 46% of the vote as the favorite player. Bellinger is not a surprise either, 10.7% of the vote. You know, MVP player, plays for the Dodgers, 4 million fans walk through Dodger Stadium a year. Mike Trout at 6.7%. I don't think that's a shock either. Arguably best player in the game. But I look at the Rams. Carlos Vela, by the way, 8.3%. So he's actually third on the list. I look at the Rams. They don't have any star power. And what I mean by that is I'm not saying that Aaron Donald isn't an amazing player, but he's 2.7% of the votes. Jared Goff received one written in vote. So or one write-in vote. Todd Gurley got nothing, and I know Gurley's no longer on the team, but there are no big-time stars that captivate the audience with the Rams. And L.A. needs stars. You know, of course, L.A. needs winners, but they need stars. And the Rams part of it was interesting to me because they're not really showing up. You know, they're, from a team perspective, 7.5%, but from a player perspective, there's not a player that, you know, you say, well, who's the face of the Rams? Technically, it's supposed to be Jared Goff. I don't know if he's got a lot to live up to as well over these next couple of years. But there is no star player that's kind of jumping out and you're saying, okay, you know what, 100%, that is the star player. He should be the star player. It's fascinating to kind of see all the different facets of this 1,000 survey or whatever the case is. Jess, I want to ask you this because I know that you are both heavy Dodgers and Lakers fan. Are you surprised at all on that 35-31, or do you think it should be that close, or do you think the Dodgers number should be higher?
Oh no, that's pretty much right where I expected it. You know, it's really weird because, you know, you said you 100% thought the Lakers would have at least a bigger gap, but, you know, the Dodgers haven't really been on, like, TV for everyone to see, and they still have a hold, and, you know, that's because they're winning.
And that's why people think, by the way, that's why people think they missed their opportunity over those 6 years not being on, you know, every TV. Mm-hmm. Think about where the Lakers were for 6 years, no
playoffs. They were on TV, and it was the complete opposite.
6 years, no playoffs, and the Dodgers dominating, right? Like, the Dodgers playing
as good as baseball. Winning the division every year.
And I know, here's the thing, you know, people will say, well, all the postseason games are televised, right? Fox is going to carry them, or Is it Fox that carries all of them? I think it's Fox carries all of them, but maybe TNT. I can't remember.
Fox and TBS carry the TBS, MLB playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you know how people will say, well, I could get all the playoffs, but it's not just about the playoff games. Like, it's the journey mm-hmm. that you're watching every regular season game or catching up as many as you can, or how great does Spectrum do with the Laker channel and you know, also does with the Dodger channel. Like, that just in-depth coverage. There's storylines. You feel like you know the players. You feel like you know the storylines. So by the time you get to the postseason, you don't want to go watch a movie and just watch the end. You want to know all the details leading up to the end of the movie, so then it's significant for you. It means more for you. I think it's a great point that you bring up about the Dodgers when you say, you know, you mentioned that not even that many people got to watch them, but they're still grabbing 31% of all. I got to be honest. Maybe my pulse on this is wrong. That number is higher than that number is closer to the Lakers than I thought.
No, I knew it was. Yeah, I didn't think it to be, you know, 30 or 30 or 30, whatever. But I knew, you know, Dodgers, Lakers were 1A, 1B, 1A. However you want to look at it, they are neck and neck for, you know, sports supremacy in LA for the most part.
Okay, so this is the other one that I want to point out here. The Clippers, they're actually growing in their influence. Clippers 6.4%, so they're fourth most popular team in LA. And by the way, you know, when I reference that, this obviously is not including USC and UCLA. This is just these are the professional teams. We know what SC and UCLA are in Southern California, and we know how big and powerful those alumni and those fan bases are. They fill up the Rose Bowl, they fill up the Coliseum. We'll see if that ever happens again or how long that takes. But the Clippers growing in influence. So this is interesting. In the city, they're the third most popular team. They grab 11.7%. In the county, they're seventh at 2.7%. I find the Clippers numbers interesting because this is a long-term vision for Steve Ballmer, and they know that they're never going to compete with the Los Angeles Lakers. And I don't care if Steve Ballmer cares to compete with the Los Angeles Lakers. What he's doing is he's grabbing a team in LA. Obviously, he's a big NBA fan. He was trying to get the Sonics for a long time, and that didn't happen. So here he is. He actually, I think, he was part of that group that wanted to bring that Sacramento team to Seattle. So here he is. He's got a team in LA. He has the Forum that he just purchased recently for $400 million. He's got a stadium that looks like it's in the works in Inglewood, close to where SoFi Stadium is going to be. He is building out, redoing all these different parks around the lot. All around Los Angeles, I think it's city and county, but it's definitely in the city because I know parks here where I live, there's Clippers logos on the backboards and they redo a lot of these courts in the parks, and they're trying to, you know, obviously grab kids from a younger age to grow with them. Bomber's making moves, and I think those moves are having some influence, but it's not a short-term move. It's a very long-term play. And it has to be long-term because there's no other way to compete. And by the way, I'll say this again. There's no bigger Laker fan than me. It is impossible to compete with the Los Angeles Lakers. But what they are trying to do, they are trying to do everything they can to just be a part of the mix here in Los Angeles, which leads me to Lou Williams. So Lou Williams was on ESPN's what is that show, Jess?
It's – hold on. So it's What You're Doing, but they don't call it What You're Doing. It's W-Y-D. There you go. The acronym, okay. It for short.
Okay. So Lou Williams was on and I think it's just a streaming show. 710 – or ESPN is doing a lot of these streaming shows. Just like I have spent a lot of time talking about how the Lakers were trying to turn a corner – were right there. They had just beat the Clippers. Lou Williams was talking about the Clips, and he felt the Clips were in a similar position. They were just playing their best before the season stopped. You play that, Curtis?
We felt good. Our confidence was sky high. You know, we were keeping our poker face on, and we wanted people to keep thinking that we were still trying to figure it out, but internally we felt really good about the direction that we were heading in and going into the end of March and wrapping the season up, going into the playoffs. We felt really good.
He kind of says the same thing. He goes off of that too, where the Lakers were at a point where we felt, hey, bring the Clippers on now in a 7-game set. Lou Williams felt the same way with the Clippers. And that was that picture perfect matchup. Yes, can you believe this? Lakers and the Clippers have still never played each other. They've never played each other in the NBA playoffs. So there's more of that interview that I want to get into, and we'll get into it a little bit later. He talked a little bit about Kawhi Leonard, talked a little bit about how that team is pegged wrong. So we'll do that. We got to do the senior shout-out coming up next. Francesca Ledick, Tesoro High School, Rancho Santa Margarita. She'll come up. This will be the final day that we're doing these high school shout-outs. It's been fantastic to do it for over the last 2 weeks. So we'll do that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, so we've been doing the senior shout-outs now for 2 weeks. Enjoyed listening to all these different athletes, these student athletes, whether in high school or in college. By the way, just a great, we had baseball, we had softball, we've had lacrosse, we've had basketball, we had a band member. We have all these different athletes. So it's great to hear their story. Tonight, our senior shout out is Francesca Ledick, Tesoro High School, Rancho Santa Margarita. Francesca, thank you for coming on. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, of course. Okay, so tell us, what sports did you play in high school?
I played basketball, and then I tried softball, and then I played lacrosse, and then tennis.
Basketball, softball, tennis, and lacrosse. Okay, what's your favorite sport out of the four?
Definitely lacrosse out of all of them.
Is that right? Lacrosse. Why lacrosse? Why did you like lacrosse the most?
I love the aspect of having a bigger team and being able to meet more people and all the different positions. I think it's really cool, and it's a very unique sport too.
What position did you play in basketball?
I played point guard.
Point guard. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So how about what's your favorite sport to watch on TV? Did you watch a lot of sports on TV or not really? You just played. Yeah, you did.
Oh, yes. Growing up, I've always watched basketball the most. It's so hype. I love it so much.
Who was your favorite team growing up?
Favorite team, definitely the Lakers.
How about your favorite player?
Hands down, Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, look, it's
my all-time idol.
That's awesome. I think those two go together, right? If you're going to say the Lakers, most people are going to say Kobe. Can you do me a favor? I want you to share a story, because I was reading the profile here, and it says that you sung the national anthem before every lacrosse game. How did that come about?
Junior year, we had a hard time getting together the audio for the national anthem, and it kind of felt empty for the team, according to what they've been saying. Everyone felt kind of awkward just listening to the instrumental, and so my mom actually suggested that I would step up to singing the anthem. And then ever since, I've been singing the anthem for every home game, so that was really cool.
Were you nervous in the beginning to do it, or are you comfortable behind a mic?
Oh yeah, I was terrified, because I've never really done that before, and it was at first really difficult because there was a lot of feedback, and I could hear my echo, and I had a hard time trying to sing while doing that at the same time. But after a while, I got used to it, so that was pretty cool.
So what is in high school, what's been your favorite subject in high school? Tell me, just maybe from a school perspective, outside of sports, what did you enjoy studying?
I loved taking French. I think that was my absolute favorite class, because not only was it so fun, but I loved learning about the culture and then just learning about other things outside of the U.S. and getting to know the world from a different point of view. It's not like the basic lectures and things like that, but it was so interactive, and I loved my teachers and my classmates, and it was just so unique compared to the other classes that I've taken before.
Have you got a chance to visit? Have you got a chance to go to France or not yet?
No, not yet. I really want to after this whole pandemic. That's my ultimate dream, is to study abroad over there. So
that's awesome.
I'm really hoping
for
the best.
That's very cool. Okay, so when you found out that the school year was going to get cut short, or at least no more going to school, and everything was going to be done at from home, how's that adjustment been? Has that been pretty tough to just one, be away from your friends, two, missing out on some of those things that you just associate with your senior year? Has that been tough?
Oh yeah, for sure. I definitely took going to class for granted. I never thought I would say this, but I actually really miss going to class. I miss my teachers so much, and they've done so much for me, and they've taught me so much even within a span of a few months. And so, the changes have been really tough, but I don't know. I feel like everything happens for a reason, and that this is a good way of making sure that I appreciate everything that is given to me.
That's a good that's a good mind frame to have on that. Francesca Luddick, Tesoro High School in Rancho Santa Margarita, joining the SLEWA show. What are you thinking to do after high school? What have you planned, or what are you in the process of planning?
That's a really good question. I so far am hoping to become a marketer.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in the business marketing area, but I also really want to aim for songwriting in the mix, something mm-hmm. that has to do with music, because I definitely cannot let that go. So I really want to do something in that field.
Okay, so how about keeping in touch with your friends? Have you been able to keep in touch with all your friends with even though you're not going to school?
Oh yeah, for sure. Social media has been such a blessing. And I am so glad that I've been able to connect with my friends. And I'm just really thankful that we're in a time period where we're allowed to have the ability to really communicate.
You know what's funny, Francesca, is every one of these that we've done so far, and I've done, you'll be the 10th student that I've had on. We did it Monday through Friday last week and Monday through Friday this week. How are you guys so comfortable behind a microphone at such a young age? I think everybody's been very comfortable. You did a great job. So thank you for joining
the
show, and wish you nothing but the best, okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, you got it. That's Francesca Luddick, Tesoro High School, Rancho Santa Margarita. Honestly, like everyone that's come on, they are so comfortable to talk about whatever. And it's great that we did that over the course of 2 weeks. I enjoyed doing it. I definitely did. If they want to bring that back, if the station says, hey, let's keep doing this, it'd be fantastic. But it's great to hear each one of these kids. They all have a different story and a unique story. So it's great to do that. All right, we got halftime coming up next. Jesse and Curtis will hop on as well. So we'll do that. Stay right here. This is the SLEWA Show on 710 ESPN. All right. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Quick reminder for tomorrow, Dr. Clapper, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., the Weekend Warrior Show. So that's coming up tomorrow. And then all next week, we're back Monday through Friday. Lakers talk. Thursday and Friday, we'll do these special draft shows, NFL draft shows. That's going to be with Kirk Morrison. So let's get halftime started. This is what I want to get started with, fellas. We've had the hype of this documentary for the last, what have we known now? Probably the last 3 weeks or so, we know that The Last Dance is coming. And I can't wait to, obviously just watch this thing. I'm going to do a little, maybe half hour post-game Periscope something type of thing with Sedano on Sunday. This is the question that I ask for you guys. It doesn't have to necessarily be a sports documentary. Are you guys documentary fans or no?
I love documentaries. Oh, I will sit and watch documentaries all day.
I'm with you, by the way. I'm with you. I love documentaries as well. So give me one or two documentaries that stand out to you. They could be about anything. They could be sports. Curtis, if you need a second to think about it. Jess, it sounds like you already got one in mind. What's one that stands out to you?
So the first one that just comes to mind right off the bat is Dark Side of the Ring. I know I've talked about it before, but it's because it's so good. Mm-hmm. I love anything that looks at the complete opposite of anything, or it's a controversial topic. It's something that, it's not a lot of people are talking about. The Dark Side of the Ring definitely takes a look at, you know, that dark side of wrestling that no one really talks about, you know, that Chris Benoit was a big thing that they just released an episode on. I mean, that's a really, really heavy topic in wrestling, just because, you know, he was a great, phenomenal wrestler, but because of the actions he did before he killed himself, it's just like it's hard to like talk good about that guy, no matter, you know, because a lot of people saw him as like, you know, normal. He was a good guy, but it's just, you know, there's a wrestling, whole other twist to it.
Wrestling has this interesting storyline because it's so different. Like, I know that the WWF, WWE, when I say it's interesting, it's like, it is this made up, fascinating, incredibly creative gorilla, you know, this machine that just has been going for years. And when you hear some of the stories of these guys, and maybe it's addictions, maybe it's problems with their body, like when they get into, what movie was that? The Wrestler?
Oh yeah, Mickey Rourke.
Okay, I know that wasn't. Who was that based off of? What was that story? But is it based off anybody, or is it just in general?
I don't think it was. I don't know. I never looked like past into it if it was based like on a true story or not. But a lot of the stuff that happens to him in that movie is accurate with how, you know, other wrestlers have come up and how they've dealt with the decline of their athletic bodies and tried to remain up top. So whether
it's kind of fascinating to me, like that whole, like, I see what you get interested in, and you don't have to be a wrestling fan to be interested in a documentary like that. I want to throw out one documentary. Did you guys ever see Free Solo?
No.
Okay. Have you seen it? Have you seen it, Curtis?
It sounds familiar, but I don't think so.
Okay. Free Solo is, this dude that literally climbs. Free Solo means you climb up, you know, you're rock climbing without any ropes. It's you're not using any, you don't have any help as you're going up the side of a mountain or whatever the case is.
I'm out.
No. You should see it. Free Solo, that's a fantastic one. Another good one, a classic. Do you guys ever see Bowling for Columbine?
Oh yeah.
You know what, I have
a very good one.
Okay.
It's a good one. It's one of those documentaries, like, if you're a fan, you have to watch, but I just haven't had like the opportunity to sit down and like watch it.
That's one of the things. So documentaries for me, just like you said it, Jess, there's nothing better than a good documentary. It's as good as journalism as they get. And this one coming out for Sunday, The Last Dance. It makes me think of some of those documentaries that you're like, how good was the one with the O.J. Simpson one that they had, the six-part?
Made in America?
How good was that?
That one, right? Like, yeah, that one was good.
I mean, these are just, you cannot, movies tell their own stories, and you know, a lot of the times they're just made up stories, but these documentaries, man, they take it to a whole different level. Curtis, you think of any?
Yeah, well, I remember we brought this up before, but that Icarus documentary, I still recommend that. I don't know if you've gotten to see that yet, but that was the Russian doping thing. But another one I watched maybe a couple months ago was, it was on Netflix. It was the Ted Bundy tapes one. Did you ever watch that one?
Oh, yeah, that one's creepy.
The guy, I think it was a detective. He gets Ted Bundy to, like, admit to everything he did, I think hours before he was, you know, what was his last interview he granted or whatever. And just the story of that guy, it's just so crazy, and it was so well done, but it's kind of morbid. But yeah, it was a very, very compelling documentary that I saw recently.
There's, I'm going to throw this out there. There's PBS has Frontline, right? Frontline is just documentaries. So if you guys are ever looking for good documentaries, the one that I do have to go see, and a lot of them are, you know, very political. The one that Mason and Island told me to see, I still haven't seen, When We Were Kings. It's on Muhammad Ali. So I got to go see that one. They said that's the best documentary of Muhammad Ali and one of the best documentaries they've ever watched. So I got to put that one on my list. Why don't you go, Jess?
All right. Before I go on, I'm going to recommend one, because when Curtis was talking about the Ted Bundy one, it took me back, because right around that time I watched that one, and I watched one called Abducted in Plain Sight, which is the, by far, I mean, I thought Tiger King was crazy. This thing gets you can get even crazier.
What's that about?
So it's about this guy who kidnaps a girl from her family, but the family somehow got seduced by this guy, and he like doesn't really kidnap her, but kidnaps her. But because he seduced this family into thinking he's an okay guy, it was really big when it came out. It came out like maybe a year and a half ago. But that's one of those documentaries that you watch and your jaw is just on the floor every time because of, you know, like how did this happen? How can this happen? That's
right,
a good
so
one to watch.
This all leads to Sunday, Last Dance. That's going to be the one everybody's talking about for weeks. So go ahead, Jess.
All right, moving on. I got a game for you guys.
Okay.
So today the NFL released their top-selling player as a form of merchandise. And for the first time in – I lost that. For the first time in a minute, the Patrick Mahomes bumped Tom Brady off. So Patrick Mahomes is number one at NFL in merch sales with Tom Brady at number two. So I have the top 50 list here. I'm going to see how many you two. I want the first to five, but I got a little twist to it.
Okay.
The fifth and final one has to be within the top 10. So I gave you two, Mahomes and Brady, so those don't count. So anywhere from 3 to 10. That fifth and final one that gives you the actual win has to be from within that top 10 range.
Okay. I think I got it.
All right. You ready, Curtis?
I mean, as ready as I'll ever be.
All right, as ready as you ever be. Because you say that, Curtis, you can go first.
Okay. Let's see. I'm not a huge fan of him, but I know he's very popular. Joey Bosa.
Joey Bosa is... Oops. Ah. Computer went on the fritz with me.
So we're just...
Not on the list. Any player, and I'm going to tell you if it's in the top 50. But it's going to be the first to five. Joey okay. Bosa, not on the list. So, Alan.
All right, we're just going to go by just sheer popularity. Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson, number three on the list. Alan, you're up 1-0. Curtis?
Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield, number five. Look at that. Already in the
Baker
top
Mayfield
10.
Is top five?
I know. I would have not have ever
he's
guessed
a, he's
that.
He's a frat king, man.
That's
love him.
That is true, though. All right,
okay, just by mere amount of Cowboy fans, Dak Prescott.
Dak Prescott, number 12 on the list.
Okay.
Curtis?
I'll pigtail off Allen and go Zeke Elliott.
Zeke Elliott, number 4 on the list. All right, you guys gained some steam. 2-2.
Okay, we'll go with popular quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers, number 6 on that list. Ooh, that top 10 getting real thin, but we still got a couple names on there.
What about OBJ?
Odell Beckham Jr., number 7 on that list. Ooh, man, that top 10 list is getting real thin for you guys. You got to start thinking outside the box.
Drew Brees.
Drew Brees, number 13 on that list. All right, Alan, that was your fourth one, which means your next one, you got to get within that top 10. So, while you think, Curtis, give me a name.
Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson, number 15 on that list. This is perfect. This is exactly where I wanted you guys. Both of you guys have four. There is three names in that top 10 that you guys have not said. So, let's see which one of you two can get one of these three names. Alan, it is to you.
So there's three more players that are top 5 in jersey sales?
Top 10 in jersey sales.
Or top 10 in jersey sales?
Mm-hmm. That you guys haven't mentioned yet.
It's not going to be a Ram. We know it's not going to be a Ram. Definitely not going to be a Charger. I got to just think teams here. I want to go a 49er, but I don't feel like a 49er would be in a top 10. Would a Patriot be in the top 10?
technically a Patriot is in the top 10. It's Tom Brady. But with another
That's
one outside
right,
of Brady.
Last year?
Mm-hmm.
It's you know tough. Who's you know who's very, very popular, but I don't know if he'd be top 10.
And take a I'm just chance. Gonna take a guess.
George Kittle is very popular.
Is he your final answer, Alan?
I'll go Kittle.
Oh, Alan with the clutch. George Kittle is number 10. Right on the cusp.
You know why these are tough? These are tough because you just have to think popularity. It's not like you're thinking – like the fact that Drew Brees isn't top 10 or Russell Wilson isn't top 10.
I mean, the
like,
fact that Baker Mayfield's top 5 Dak, should say something.
How about Dak Prescott isn't top 10? Like that – those surprise me more that they're not there than, you know, some of these – like. But he is. I mean – listen, how popular was Kittle this past season? Every time
I
saw Kittle highlights,
is the best. I love
he
him.
Was running over players. Who were the other top 10 guys?
I'll tell you right now, but just out of curiosity, Curtis, do you know who you would have chosen? I just want to see if you would have gotten it had Alan gotten it wrong.
Yeah, I was going to do you a solid two and say Gucci Garop.
Oh, my God. Guess who's number 9? Johnny Garoppolo and Jimmy Garoppolo. How crazy is that?
I'm surprised actually Garoppolo's in that. Like how
so was Garoppolo, I. So was I.
Well, I'm thinking
how
like
is Garoppolo more popular than how's he outselling Drew Brees or how's he selling Russell Wilson? How's he outselling these guys?
My thought process is bandwagoning because the Niners went and we
no,
had that big
exactly
streak
right.
at the beginning. And you think usually when you're not used to that stuff, you pick like a quarterback or something like that to make a jersey of. You know, for sometimes you don't have that many star players, but usually a quarterback's one. So that was my guess just because he's also kind of polarizing in the outside.
Both of you guys were on that right. Both of you guys were on the right track. So just, you know, the top 10, it went Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Lamar Jackson, Ezekiel Elliott, Baker Mayfield. That's a top 5. And then the bottom, the last of the top 10, Aaron Rodgers, Odell Beckham Jr., Khalil Mack, Jimmy Garoppolo, and George Kittle. Surprisingly,
That's kind of an interesting game. Like, I don't know for the NBA if it would be like that, but maybe it would. Maybe there's, you know, popularity. There's a player that's not an all-star, but he's more popular.
Yeah, if I see one of these for the NBA, I'll definitely bring it back and make it a game. But just kind of like looking down at the list, I kind of just want to like mention to some of the weird random names that I see on here. So number 19, Julian Edelman.
Edelman, that actually, I was actually thinking in my head, I was close to picking him top 10 just because he's very well known and very popular. So that one's not a surprise. I mean, for him to be top 20, I'm not surprised on that.
But would you be more surprised that he's more popular than Todd Gurley and Aaron Donald, the Rams?
Yes. I mean, I'm sorry. No, I'm not surprised. Just because he's had so much success and he was doing it with the most popular player, you know, in Tom Brady. I know Mahomes is more popular this year, but I'm not as surprised because every time you've seen in the playoffs for the most part over the last, you know, handful of years, Edelman has been there with Tom Brady. So I'm not too surprised on that. But listen, remember how I was saying I was reading that LA Times article? Not enough star power from the Rams.
No.
You know, there isn't, and I'm not – look, Aaron Donald is a star, but you know what I'm talking about when I say this. There is no player that when you go to a Rams game right now, there's no question about it. You're like, yeah, that's the baddest man in the NFL right now. I guess you could say that about Aaron Donald because he is, but he doesn't have – it's not this like box office sensation. The Chargers got none of that at all. But the Rams, I feel like that's kind of a missing piece. And these jersey sales that you're talking about, that represents that. You know, I think that gives a little bit indication that they don't have that. So,
yeah, and there's absolutely zero Chargers in the top 50.
Yeah, you probably make a top 100 and it's still zero.
Maybe. I mean, I think Joey Bosa would make it. Nick Bosa was number 16. His brother, his younger brother, rookie, number 16.
If I would have switched the Bosas, I would have.
You would have switched the Bosas.
Just said Bosa. How about you just said Bosa? You would have been good to go.
I don't like either one of them, though.
All right, Curtis, what do you got there?
Well, first of all, Slee, congrats. You beat me in a game now.
I got one. I got one. One under the belt.
Now we're even.
One under the belt.
So Mason can get some under his belt next week.
Bro, that's how funny is that? I literally was like today planning. I was like, okay, I'm going to do a weed game for Mason. And Mason, instead of winning the weed game, was like, no, I'll just partake in it.
You know what? Do another weed game on Monday. Do it on actually 420 and see if it just resonates better.
Well, I can't because of crosstalk. Crosstalk's not till 6.
No, so I mean, but
it's also day 420.
Monday is the actual 420.
Monday is 420. Oh my gosh, I didn't even think about that. I got you. I got you. What you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's 4 of the year 2020, so it's a whole month.
What I should do was this is what I was thinking of doing, but I couldn't find them. I'll do a movie weed trivia game with Mace.
Ooh, the smokest, the dopest of the dopest.
But like, think about it. Like, what he knows more than anything is movies, right? And then he also knows, he should know his, we'll see. I'll quiz him on some stuff. Like, I'll come up with some games that have some type of interaction between that. So, Curtis, you jump in.
Yeah, I'll keep it quick. So, I saw this on Twitter. Today, what was trending was people were posting pictures of their failed attempts at cooking since everyone's locked, you know, in quarantine right now. You know, people taking pictures of burnt cakes and all that. So it got me thinking of the first time I tried to do something and I failed horribly. I remember
this was during the quarantine.
No, just in theirs came up just because everyone's at home now and all, you know,
everyone's trying to cook
and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but for me, when I was 16, I tried to fix my truck. I tried to do something simple, like change the plugs or something. And I went in not prepared or anything and didn't know what I was doing. I just wanted to do it. I ended up costing myself like $600 in repairs because I didn't do it right. So it just made me think of, is there something that you ever have done where you tried to do something and failed spectacularly, but you wish, you know, you could have another shot or something you wish you were good at that you know you're not?
Do you want me to talk about like the last like 24 hours or just in general in life?
Because
I think I could do this for like I could do this for about 3 hours. It will definitely take up the rest of the show. How about just not being a handyman around the pad? I mean, I'm awful at all this stuff. Like I've tried to actually, I don't even try anymore. But there are times I've tried to like, you know, hang a TV up and then I just very soon realize, why not just go on Yelp and find a handyman to come hang the TV for me? So there are many, many things. I don't do any stuff around the house. And I know that's kind of stupid and maybe it's lazy, but I have this like mindset of, well, I'm just going to go work on the things that I know and that I could try and be good at. But when I come home, there's certain people that they can do everything around the house. I'm not one of those guys. Jess, are you one of those guys or no?
I try to be for the most part. I'll try to like do stuff myself. I don't try to go over the top. Like if there's like a plumbing issue or like a broken window or something along those lines, I'm like, I'm not even going to try. I'm going to call a professional before I go and mess it up. But if it's like, you know, for example, I hung a curtain up on my closet because I have an open closet and my mom made a curtain for me and my girlfriend for our closet. And I did the hooking, the drilling that took the entire day to hook 4 drills. Because I couldn't get it right, and I was so frustrated. I was so mad. I mean, it's perfect. It looks fine now, but I remember
I'm with you. Like, you know where they're like knock for, you know, the stud or I don't even know what they're talking about when they say that. I'll just knock all over. I'll knock on the door. Like, I don't know what they're talking about, right? Like, they're saying, you know, find the hollow spot or whatever, or don't do it at the hollow spot. Curtis, are you a handyman at all or no?
No, well, I was only thinking about this because, you know, after I messed up my truck when I was 16 and clueless, I was like almost discouraged from trying it again. I know you just mentioned you were kind of, you know, after the couple mistakes, you're discouraged from doing it. But I went back and like, I love working on my car now and I've been doing it for, you know, 4 or 5 years and, you know, I'm much more careful now, but it's like, I got discouraged for a long time because, you know,
but
I think
you're
going to mess it up. But
no, I'm with you. But that is actually something. It's like, when you just stop trying whatever it is because, you know, your ego steps in or you're like you said, you just find ways to make excuses and you're like, no, I'm not going to help myself. I'm going to hurt myself in doing this. I'm with you, bro. Like if you keep trying whatever you're going to do, you're eventually going to figure it out. And maybe because, you know, the place that I live, I rent where I'm at, that you don't have as much pride of as if it was your own place. Maybe I would be much more like, okay, well, let me try and figure this out because it's more cost effective or it's smarter maybe that's because that's part of the reason why I don't do it here. But the cooking fails, that stuff is real. Everybody right now is trying to cook, and I'm sure there are many times a lot of food is being made that doesn't exactly taste that good.
I remember I once made a super, super, super duper burnt grilled cheese at Coachella one year.
That's not bad. Yeah, those aren't.
No.
I prefer.
I like toasted grilled cheese, but it was, let's just say the day had been, I don't want to say long, but it had been definitely well into the day where I had been drinking, and I might have just left it on the grill for too long, or I might have just gone overconfident and thought that I was doing it right. But I felt like when I was eating it, I was eating cardboard. Like, it wasn't
probably,
just
burnt, probably
it was black. Yeah, it was
don't
black.
Eat that.
It wasn't.
Yeah, don't eat that one. Let that one go, Jess. Let that one go.
I did it. I have the whole thing with the proud.
Do you have another one, Jess, or is that it?
That's all I got for you, Alan.
Okay. All right, fellas. When we come back, if you guys can find, because I do want to play it. So the WNBA did something really, really cool to start off their draft. I want to talk about that when we come back. Also, Cooper Kupp was on First Take. So speaking of the Rams, we'll listen to Cooper Kupp. And if you guys want to be a part of the show at all, hit me on Twitter at Alan Sliwa, or feel free to call into the show 877-710-ESPN. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Welcome back to the Sliwa Show. I'm excited about this interview. I've been promoting it all show. Andy Bernstein, who's the official photographer of the Lakers, the NBA, nice enough to join the Sliwa Show. Andy, how are you doing?
Well, Alan, I'm doing pretty well. Just trying to get by the best we can. We'd be in the first round of the playoffs right now, and this time of year is always super exciting for me. But the good news is that I'm always on the road for my birthday, which is next week. So for the first time in like probably forever, I'll be home.
That's right.
that makes my wife, my kids feel pretty good. So I'm doing okay, Alan. I've been busy doing my podcast and reorganizing my office, and I probably reorganized the garage about 9 times already. So, doing okay.
I feel like that's what everybody's doing, when you're sitting at home and you're trying to get as much work as you can, done. You're trying to be as productive as you can. But like you said, I'm sure everybody is sitting around the house saying, what can I clean up here? What can I give away? I'm sure there's a lot of that going on. But Andy, this is great timing because, here we are, such an anticipated 10-part series, The Last Dance, showcasing the Chicago Bulls and all the unbelievable players and personalities and coaches that comes with the Chicago Bulls back in that era. Give me a little background because I know you've been around the NBA. How many years have you been around the NBA now?
Well, this is my 38th season, believe it or not.
Wow.
And I was very, very fortunate that I got to cover all 6 of those Bulls championship years. Phil Jackson and I forged a nice friendship early in that run, and I really was probably the first photographer he would let in the locker room when they won a championship. So counting the 5 in LA, it's 11 victorious locker rooms and champagne celebrations. And it was a tremendous experience. I was spending so much time in Chicago, probably more time in Chicago than I was in LA during that run. So it was definitely fun. I can't wait to see this documentary because all of my cohorts shot it and produced it. So all the guys I work with for years at NBA Entertainment. So that's really exciting.
Andy, did you know that this was in the works or had been in the works for a while? Like, were there ever conversations with some of these folks that, like you mentioned, you've worked with for so long? Did you know this was coming? That, you know, 5 years ago, were people saying, yeah, we're working on this? Or was this all just within the last couple of years that they assembled this together?
Well, I obviously knew that the Bulls had allowed NBA Entertainment to document that entire season, and especially the finals run, because I was part of that. I was kind of piggybacking on the still coverage of what they were doing on the video film side. And I think the intent, I don't want to speak for these, you know, the guys I work with, but I think the intent was to come out with a documentary pretty close to the end of that run, you know, at some point, maybe before the next season. It never happened for whatever reason, and that's, you know, way beyond me. And that material has just sat in the can, as we say in the business, for all of these years. And, you know, you heard rumblings now and then that, oh, it's going to resurface and it's finally going to come out, and it just never did. And then, you know, I think all the stars aligned, and Mandalay Sports Media got involved. My good friend John Weinbach helped to get that rolling, and then it ended up at ESPN, and that's, you know, that's what we're going to see on Sunday. So it's really exciting.
Andy Bernstein, official photographer, really the NBA, been doing it for 38 years. We see him all the time at Laker games, and some of the most iconic shots you can think of in the NBA are through the lens of Andy Bernstein. So it's great to kind of get your perspective on this, Andy. I'll ask you, just looking at that Bulls team specifically, that 97-98 season, how much different was covering that Bulls team than some of the other great teams in the past? And that could be the Lakers, it could be the Celtics, it could be the Golden State Warriors, the Cleveland Cavaliers. What was so special about that 97-98 team?
Well, I think the thing that comes to mind most, a couple of things, is that, first of all, they had already done a three-peat, and then they won the next, you know, when Michael came back, they won two in a row. And then everyone knew that that team was full of free agents, that they were probably going to dissemble that team. So the pressure, I think, was tremendous on them to win another three-peat, you know, complete another three-peat before that team, you know, started scattering all over the place. Nice. And I think they would have all felt very incomplete if they hadn't won that, you know, sixth championship and the second three-peat. So covering that team, there was a lot of anticipation, like getting through the season and seeing how far the Bulls would go. And it was almost expected that they would get to the finals. And like I said, I spent a lot of time in Chicago covering them. You know, covering the Bulls in those days was literally like covering a rock show, you know, on tour, because you had all of these characters and the entourages and the security, and they were, it was just so different than the Showtime, you know, Bird Magic era, which was great and fantastic, but there wasn't as much, I guess, attention and as much media and celebrity kind of part of it that there was with the Bulls. I mean, you had Michael, you had Scotty, you had Dennis, you had Phil, you had all the interplay going on between Jerry Krause, you know, and Michael and the team. You know, the rabid fans in Chicago, you've been to Chicago, you know how crazy they are. You know, all of that stuff adding up to, and they, you know, need to win this sixth championship to complete the double three-peat. So it was fun. It was super fun for me. And the only negative about the whole thing was that I caught pneumonia.
Really?
After they won the championship, you know, they beat Utah in Salt Lake City, and I was sent to the Bulls hotel from Delta Center, which is about, I don't know, about 8 blocks. I had to walk or run the whole way. I was soaked in champagne, right? And, you know, it's a June night, but it's a little bit chilly. And I get to the hotel, and that's where I took the picture of Michael at the piano, you know, and all that stuff. And I finally got back to my hotel probably 5 or 6 in the morning, and flew home and ended up, I had pneumonia.
Jeez.
I caught this terrible chill, and 2 weeks I was like on the shelf. So that's an unfortunate memory from that run, but something that I'll definitely remember.
was that Andy? Was that the most popular team you've ever covered, that you've ever been around?
That's a great question, Alan.
You know, I know the Kobe and Shaq days, Ireland, yeah, Michael Thompson always say how popular they were, but just in comparison, yeah, since you've seen so many of these different teams.
I think they were the most, maybe the most intriguing. I don't know about the most popular. You know, it's hard to say that the Magic, Showtime, Laker teams weren't, mm-hmm, you know, popular and exciting, maybe on a different level or a different scale. And, of course, Shaq and Kobe. LeBron, you know, when LeBron went back to Cleveland and won that championship, the LeBron Wade tandem down in Miami. I mean, and look at the Warriors. I mean, you know, that was a rock show in itself. but a different cast of characters for sure. That maybe a different dynamic. So, you know, when I look back at my career and all these different eras. And even, you know, if you even look at the Spurs and their championships and the back-to-backs that Houston won and the Bad Boys, you know, all of these teams had their dynamics and their characters and their stories. And that's what makes our job so much fun, because you can never stop talking about it. You know, there's always something to talk about and a comparison. And I love that. And I love that about sports.
Andy Bernstein, official photographer of the NBA, also official photographer of the Lakers, was there for that Bulls run. The Last Dance comes out this Sunday, so he's kind of reminiscing and reflecting on his time with the Bulls in that 97-98 season. Andy, what are some of the more iconic shots that stand out to you? Just, you know, when you look back and you look through that season and maybe you're going through all the photographs that you took, what are the ones that instantly jump out to you?
Well, you know, there's, of course, the famous shot of Michael Jordan, you know, over Byron Russell, that one. That was a pretty amazing moment. And what game was that? I think that was game six,
Game six,
Yeah,
that wrapped
game
it up.
Six. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that photograph actually sort of changed everything in the way that we as NBA photos photographers covered an NBA Finals game, because people remember that picture, you know, 0.6 on the clock. Mm. It's shot from the other side of the court, and you see the clock, you see Byron Russell, who has stumbled, you see Michael up in the air, and all the fans looking up, you know, in disbelief, you know, because it was in Salt Lake City.
That iconic follow-through by Michael,
yeah,
you know, it's keep explaining it. It's an amazing shot.
Yeah, so the backstory on that, Alan, is that that photograph was actually taken by Fernando Medina, who was one of our photographers, on the baseline on the other side, right? So he could get that sort of panoramic shot. But I'm the guy who fired his camera from the other side of the court where Michael actually took the shot. Mm. So we were doing, in those days, what we called human remotes, where a photographer would be tied into a remote system that I would trigger. So they would essentially be composing the picture, focusing the picture, but they wouldn't be clicking the shutter. I would be doing that from somewhere else. And that set up the protocol from that moment forward of, if there's a last second shot, we have to shoot it wide so we see the clock, we see the fans, we see the whole scene. Hmm. And, you know, Fernando, to his credit, did everything right, but I had to actually click it at the right moment. So it's kind of, nobody really knows that story, but that's really how it happened. I was in the corner, right? Pretty much, if you look at the photograph, I'm on the sort of that left sideline where my photography position was. And just as Michael went up, I got blocked. There's a player, maybe a referee. Mm-hmm. So all I could see was the bottom of his shoes as he went up. And then I just clicked it, thinking, okay, this is the right moment to click, because I knew that Fernando, as well as the other two or three human remotes that we had, human drones, that they were shooting it as well at that moment. And, you know, thank God it turned out the way it did, because that picture has just lived forever. And it's, you know, it kind of sums up the entire experience. So it was great.
That's a great story. What a cool story, and what a great setup to that story as well. You mentioned, Andy, when we started the conversation, you said that you were around for all of Phil Jackson's championships, all 11, 11 championships. Just out of curiosity, how did Phil evolve? Like, your relationship, whether with him personally or just observing him, how did he evolve from his time with the Chicago Bulls to these completely different personalities with the Los Angeles Lakers? How did that evolve over time?
Well, as you're asking me that, I'm laughing because I remember my first encounter with Phil was early when he became coach, and I tried to get close to his huddle before the game, and he gave me this look, this literally stared me down look. Like, if you come one inch closer, I'm going to reach out and just strangle you. And we have laughed about that picture forever. But at that moment, I was scared to death of Phil. I mean, much less, you know, I got Michael in there. I got Scotty, you know. So that was my first encounter with Phil. But then when they got to that first championship, and the Bulls won it at the Forum, you know, and I took that iconic photo of Michael hugging the trophy with his dad. Anyway, I was the first photographer in to the Bulls winning locker room. And from that moment on, Phil just sort of saw me as part of the furniture. You know, he just would assume that I would be the first guy in. By the time they got to like the third championship, he just knew that I would be there. So I kind of weathered that storm of the stare, you know, and made my way in. And then, you know, he was very respectful of what I did. And Bill had a real love for photography that went back to his days at the Knicks. And we became friends. And, of course, we did our book together during the 2009-10 championship. And, you know, he's still an amazing, wonderful guy to talk to. And I love seeing him, talking to him. But the first encounter was not the best.
I love it. But these are the things that I think make some of these stories so great. And they're so behind the scenes. I'm sure there are a lot of listeners out there that, you know, it's intriguing to listen to these stories. If we could do this, Andy, as this show gets going, it's going to go for 5 straight weeks. Maybe I could have you have you on again in the next couple of weeks, and we could talk about what we've seen, and maybe you can give us a little bit more insight of this this 10-part series, The Last Dance on ESPN. Thank you, Andy. I greatly appreciate it. You enjoy your weekend, and we'll touch base soon.
Okay, buddy. You take care.
All right, great stuff there from Andy Bernstein. I love those personal stories, too. I mean, just for him to be around the NBA for 38 years, getting a chance to cover Magic and the Bird days, the Kobe and Shaq days, the Bulls with Michael Jordan, Scotty, and Dennis and Phil, the Cavaliers with LeBron, the Golden State Warriors with, you know, the four stars that they had. It's such a different perspective. I did mention a little bit earlier, Cooper Kupp was on First Take. Let's talk Rams when we come back. We'll play that. He kind of gives his thought process on what the team has to do to improve from last year and obviously not making the playoffs. So that's coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. A quick reminder, tomorrow morning starting at 7 a.m., Dr. Clapper, the Weekend Warrior. That's from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Next week, same thing. Sliwa Show all week long from starting at 6:30. Lakers talk on Monday. Sliwa Show from Tuesday to Friday. So hopefully we continue to have – I feel like every single day there's been something different to talk about. Cooper Kupp was on First Take a little bit earlier, this morning with Kellerman, with Molly Karam and Stephen A. Smith. Here's Cooper Kupp on what it's going to take to improve from last season.
Man, I mean, obviously we fell short of expectations this last year. There's no getting around that. And losing Brandon and Todd, I mean, incredible football players. But on top of that, also just really, you know, quality people that brought a lot to our team, brought a lot to our locker room outside of what they bring on the football field. So I'm going to miss those guys. But, you know, we've got incredible football players in each of those rooms. And, you know, I can't wait until we can get back out in the field again and see what these guys can do with the ball in their hands. And, you know, you go back to the drawing board, I think, a little bit. You got to refine your identity. And, our expectations for ourselves haven't changed at all. Losing these guys, our expectations, our standards we hold ourselves to, that stuff remains the same. It's just about staying true to that, grinding one day at a time, setting the foundation. And, by the time this, hopefully we get to get on the football field this year and play some ball. But, our expectation is to go out there and be able to compete for championships.
Rams definitely got some work to do. I mentioned this. So yesterday we were doing this. Jesse had sent me the Caesars odds. I like you looking at that, by the way. We do it for, okay, how many games are the Lakers supposed to win this year? Who's the favorite to win an NBA championship? They got all the odds there, and it's Vegas. Vegas is that's where I think from a betting perspective, they definitely got their pulse on what's happening in regards to that. So the Rams, 8.5 games is the win total for the Rams. That may or may not be enough to make it to the playoffs. And it's kind of crazy because you were just in the Super Bowl two seasons ago. Last year, you had plenty of chances to get into the postseason, but they lost the games they needed to win. They lost. Here's Cooper Kupp on how he didn't feel like they were too far off last year, but they just got to clean up a lot of small things.
Our division was great this year. We had some really good teams that we played against. We put together some really good games against those guys, and we felt like we weren't far off. There were little plays, and in football, that's how it goes. I mean, it's little plays here and there that make a difference. You saw just how close a lot of the games, particularly you talk about the 49ers, how close so many of those games are. And it's one of those games where, with football, one play can really change the outcome of a game, of a season even. And I think we were on the winning side of that sometimes in that, that year in the Super, that we got to the Super Bowl, and we weren't on that side of that last year. And, it really comes down to the details of being on our P's and Q's and making sure that, in those small things, you're doing everything right, because those small details do make such a big difference. So for us, there's a window of opportunity. We think we're right in this. We just have to, clean up these little things, make sure we're on those details.
And by the way, he is right about that. They were in a lot of big games. They were in a lot of close games. But then they also were in a position that game against the Dallas Cowboys stand out to me. It was a must win against the Cowboys, and they get smoked by Dallas. A Dallas team that wasn't even playing that good at that point of the season, and they just weren't good enough. That's the bottom line. You good teams find ways to win. Bad teams find ways to lose, and that's exactly the Rams. Last thing that I want to play from Cooper Kupp, who was on First Take a little bit earlier, I mentioned this, the popularity of the Rams here locally. So Jared Goff, what is this contract? $134 million. There's going to be an incredible amount of pressure on Jared Goff this upcoming season. And we'll see if he's going to have help in the backfield. No Todd Gurley anymore. Talks Cooper Kupp on the growth of Jared Goff.
Every single year, it's been incredible to me how he transcends what he's done before in terms of his preparation, in terms of his understanding of the game, what he's doing. I mean, there's just growth every single year. And while people might point out that statistically it might not have shown that last year, there's a lot of things that go into this game that, stats are going to lie to you. What are you doing to help your team win? And I'll say this, Jared repeatedly, week after week, day after day, comes into the facility, and he's taking steps to make sure that our team is put in the best possible position to win the game. So anything that comes with, the stats, anything like that, he would be the first to say, that is only a piece of the player that he is. It's only a piece of the story. And I can say, as someone that's spent as much time as I have with him and seeing him day in and day out, he's doing everything he can day in and day out to make sure that as an organization we're moving in the right direction. And you can't ask for anything other than that, to have a guy like that moving in that direction, leading our franchise in that direction.
All right, that's Cooper Kupp right there. So I wanted to at least play that. I know that from a Rams perspective, I know there's a lot of time before the season starts, but there isn't that much time for them to fix up a lot of stuff with the draft coming just a week from yesterday. So we'll be doing that show with Kirk Morrison next week on Thursday and Friday. If you missed any part of the show, download all the shows that we're doing right now is on the Lakers Talk on the ESPN app or on iTunes. Just type in Lakers Talk and that channel will appear there. Jesse, Curtis, appreciate everything. All the callers that were a part of the show and the tweets that we got, thank you as well. Tomorrow morning, it's the Clapper Show, Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. LA. Have a great weekend.